I'm not going to spend any time in reviewing except to point out that the way we were handling this study was from the use of the word the generations. The generation of the heaven and the earth, the generations of Adam, the generation of Noah, and the generations of the sons of Noah, the generation of, Seth next, Shem it was, then Terah, and then the generations of Abraham, Ishmael it was, and Isaac. Not Abraham at all, it was Terah. Ishmael and Isaac. Now we're in the generation of Isaac. Then there'll be two more, I believe, after that. The generation of Esau and the generation of Jacob, I believe, will be the 10. Now, 10 of these generations or expressions of the generations of certain ones, you could call it the history of this particular family. So what God was doing and is doing in this is beginning with the creation of heaven and earth and Adam, tracing through that the coming of the Messiah. Coming of the seed of the woman. Now this is really what he is doing all the way through. This is the important point we want never to lose sight of. Now tonight we're in the 30th chapter. This 30th chapter, which we closed with the 29th, beginning tonight with the 30th. This is an interesting chapter. There are two particular points to be made in the chapter. One is that in this chapter we see the beginning of the tribes of Jacob, the tribes of Israel, the birth of each individual. I think another and a practical aspect of it is it shows the unhappiness and the jealousy and the envy in a polygamous home. The envy and the jealousy of these two sisters, Leah and Rachel. One of them bearing children, the other one wasn't. The one that wasn't was the one that was most beloved. And the other one was trying to win the affection of the husband. And so you see a very unhappy situation. In fact, every polygamous home in all the Bible is an unhappy home. You'll never find one that was happy. There was Sarah and Hagar. There was unhappiness there. There was jealousy, there was faction there. In Jacob's home, the same thing. And you come on down to the parents of Samuel. Here were two wives there, and there was jealousy and faction there. So the Bible always presents the polygamous home as an unhappy home. And I think that the Mormons found the same thing true, although they tried to keep that covered up. I think those Mormon women were very unhappy, unhappy situations. Now, turning to the 30th chapter, we'll go through this rather hurriedly, for I think you're pretty well familiar with it. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel ended her sister. Now, back in chapter 29, which we closed last winter, here you have the birth of four children by Leah. Leah bore several children, and Zilpah also bare one, I believe, there. Now, Rachel envied her sister. Right? Now, this she certainly did, and we can understand that. Not a happy situation in the first place. She was the one that Jacob wanted to marry. He didn't intend to be a polygamist. He didn't want but one wife, and that was Rachel. But when old Laban deceived him, as he did, now then he finds himself with two, and these two wives, they give to him their handmaids, and so they even add to that. We'll look at that in just a moment. Rachel envied her sister, and she said unto Jacob, "Give me children, or else I die." And that was an unhappy thing for her to say. Jacob, that was not in Jacob's hand. That was in the hand of God. And the fact that "else I die" was not so. She wouldn't die as a result of it. But it shows a feeling. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of thy womb?" No, this is a matter that God deals with. Another thing I think you see in this chapter is lack of faith on the part of these women, though I do see Jacob's faith growing. Jacob's faith grows through this chapter and the next two chapters that I want to cover tonight. And she said, "Behold," my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, that she may have bear upon my knees, and I also may obtain children by her. Now it seems to me that Jacob, and especially Jacob, now Rachel wouldn't have known about it, but Jacob surely knew the situation in his father, in his grandfather's house, how that Abraham, Sarah, who had given Hagar, her handmaid, unto Abraham, and Hagar had born a son unto Abraham, and the jealousy of that, I'm sure Jacob knew about that. I'm sure that he learned it, heard of it, when he was growing up. And he should have known better than that. So at any rate, they ignore God's plan, and evidently had forgotten the unhappiness of that home. But that was not God's plan. So he has unbelief here expressing itself. Lack of faith here, ignoring the plan of God. And notice furthermore that I also may obtain children by her. In other words, I take her child and claim it for my own, ignoring the feeling of this handmaid in the matter. But you see some very ugly things in this chapter. As over against some good things and beautiful things in the next one. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, that is vindicated. Now the word judge is to vindicate. Now oftentimes a judgment is a vindication of an individual. So she has vindicated me in this matter. God has heard my voice and has given me a son. Therefore calls she his name Dan. That is, he judged or vindicated. Meaning of the name Dan. So Dan then was a son of Jacob by Bilhah, the handmaid. Right? And Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and it prevailed, and she called his name Naphtali, which means wrestlings of God here. And so these names are names of significance, or significant names that they are given. Right, but at any rate, I've wrestled. That is, wrestling was actually a struggle against a sister. Here is enmity, jealousy between the two of them, and here she has no child of her own, but she wants children to compete with her sister. Right, now, when Leah saw that she had left off bearing, she took Zilpah, her handmaid, and gave her to Jacob to wife. Right now, two reasons there. One is the jealousy of a sister. Another is that she herself has left off conceiving after bearing, I believe it was four up until this point. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bare Jacob a son. Now it seems to me that Jacob shows a weakness here. Instead of him standing up here for what was right, and what he should have known was right, why he yields under the impulses of these women, these wives here, what they were. He lets them dominate his life. Now you'll see later on his faith growing a lot stronger, but right now he lets them dominate. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bare Jacob a son, and Leah said, fortunate, or that is with fortune, or fortune is come to me. Means fortunate at any rate. She called his name Gad, that is, because, and that word Gad means fortune. Wait a minute, am I right? No, that's wrong. Fortune here is what this one means. And she called his name Gad, which we're told down here a little bit further. That is, with my happiness, I believe. No, that's, I can't see. Yeah, with fortune. I'll get it right now. Alright. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me happy. And she called his name Asher. And this word Asher means happy. So here was one then was fortunate, and one was happy, and so on here. They're all given names expressing the sentiment of the mother in the bearing of this child. So now then, you have two by this handmaid, two by one handmaid and two by the other, six by Leah and two by Rachel. We'll get to them in a few moments. I should call his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that, I'm coming on down here, and Reuben now, verse 14, and Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them unto his mother Leah. Now, how old was he at this time? Well, one man estimates about 4, 5, or 6 years old. I don't know. He couldn't have been very old. So maybe just a little toddler went out and found these, and they were pretty, and he brought them in to his mother. Sometimes we didn't think of him as being a man, but I believe he was just a child, a little lad out there in the, at that time, out in the field, running around, found him, brought him to his mother. Right? Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her sister, is it a small matter if thou hast taken away my husband, and wouldst thou take away my son's mandrakes also? In other words, you took away my husband. No. Now that's a misrepresentation. It was old Laban who had connived that thing, and he thought it was marrying Rachel, and so it was not a matter of her taking away her husband. She had done no such thing. At any rate, Rachel said, therefore, he shall lie with thee tonight for thy mandrakes. I don't know anything about these. Some think it's some kind of a thing that grew out in the field that contributed to fertility and those things. I don't know whether they did or not. She thought they did. Now, maybe they did or maybe they didn't. That I don't argue because I don't know, and I haven't found anybody else that I thought really knows. And Jacob came from the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, thou must come in unto me, for I have surely hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God hearkened unto Leah. And she conceived and bare Jacob a fifth son. For apparently she had been praying that she might have another son. For God hearkened unto her. Now I want you to note the providence of God or the rule of God in these matters. Now it seems that God is the one that closes the womb or opens the womb. Now... I don't argue much along these lines. In fact, I don't argue much along on anything that I don't know anything about. When you come to matters like this, I just don't know much about it. All I know is what the Bible says. God said he shut up a womb, we opened the womb. Well, God heard a prayer and granted it, and I accept that. But now, how that works and operates today, I don't know. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire. All right, and that is Sychar, because I gave my handmaid to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bare a sixth son to Jacob. And Leah said, God hath endowed me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun, which means he dwelt. That is the root of it does. Now, he will dwell with me. I think the idea was, she knew that Jacob loved Rachel. And I don't think there was much love. It might have developed. I don't know. I'm sure it did. But at any rate, she knew that he didn't really love her. But that her bearing of these sons would hold them together. And certainly it did and probably would anyway. But that seems to be indicated by what she said. And afterwards she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. Now, this is the only one, the only girl or daughter that's named or mentioned in his family, although I want you to look at 37:35. Now, whether this 37:35 is talking about his daughters-in-law, I don't know, and all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted, and he said, for I will go down to Sheol to my son mourning. And the father wept. Now that was when Joseph was lost. Now here were the daughters. Now were these the daughters-in-law or were they daughters? And he also over in the 46th chapter and verse 7, you have daughters mentioned again. 46 and verse 7 here. His sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. Now here again, daughters are mentioned. So I really don't know. And down also in verse 15, all the souls of his sons and his daughters were 33. Now Dinah is not mentioned anymore after, yes she is, mentioned later on. But she was not counted in some of the genealogies there. But now then, did he have other daughters or was this the only one? I couldn't tell you. For those daughters could have been his daughters-in-law. We just don't know. But, and may have been. This is the only one that is mentioned. And God remembered Rachel. Now that's an expression. We all understand it. That is, he answered her prayer. He answered her desire. He recognized it. He provided for it. Is what it means. Doesn't mean he ever forgot her, because God doesn't do that. We all understand how it is. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. That indicates she'd been crying unto God, praying unto God for a child, for a son, unto her husband. And he opened her womb. So you see God's hand in all of this. And I think his hand is in life today and in our lives and controls many of these matters. Some of them he may leave to natural means. I don't know. Just say, these are matters that are beyond me. And she conceived and bare a son and said, God had taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, saying, Jehovah add to me another son. Now the word Joseph, scholars think, may be a combination of the two ideas of removing reproach and adding a son, the prayer to add a son. But at any rate, this was a prayer that God had taken away her reproach, and she prays for another son. She's grateful for this one, but so grateful she wants another. Right? And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go unto mine own place and to my country. So you see, this is in that 14-year period. And so the oldest boy couldn't be over 12 or 14 by this time. So they're still lads, just lads or children by this time. You do have a little problem with the rapid growth of these boys a little bit later. So I have some problems there that I don't know the answer to those either. So when I don't, I'll say so. Right, now he says, I'm going to mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service wherewith I have served thee. You know that I've done well, and that really Laban's wealth was because of the faithfulness of Jacob and of God blessing him through Jacob. Jacob, God had blessed him, but it was through Jacob. And Laban said unto him, if now I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have divined that Jehovah hath blessed me for thy sake. Now that word divine is never used in a good sense in the Old Testament. It always carries with the idea of something aside from God. I have divined. It looks into the cup and divines or some other way. Now how he had done it, I don't know. How he could have been just lying for all I know. But he does know, so far as the divining is concerned. But he does know that the blessings are the result of Jacob's working for him. Well, he had very little when Jacob began working for him. He had a great deal now, and he doesn't want to lose Jacob. So he wants to make a deal with him. And so he goes on to say then, bless me for thy sake. And he said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle have fared with me. And Jacob responding, for it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it hath increased unto a multitude, and Jehovah hath blessed thee whithersoever I turned, and now when shall I provide for mine own house also? Now this is a question that whither I turned means my foot, whether my foot directed me, why God has blessed you. Right? Now I want you to note that Laban is willing to make a deal with him. But he changed it over and over. He's one of the most dishonest old hypocrites that you'll ever come in contact with in the Bible. Not a greater hypocrite, not a more dishonest fellow than old Laban. I don't know that I've ever found but one characteristic of him that I could commend. He loved his grandchildren. But I think not very many grandparents that don't do it. Maybe some of them don't. But that's about the only thing I guess you can say commendable of him that I know of. He's crooked from the word go. And now then Jacob said, it's time for me to look out my own house. Well now, and he said, what shall I give thee, Laban says. And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me aught. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed thy flock and keep it. I don't want anything. I don't want you to give me anything. Whatever I get, I want to earn it. That's commendable. Jacob shows a lot of fine, commendable traits. You see his faith growing as time goes on. In fact, we began our study of him last fall, or winter, whenever it was, where he showed there a desire for the things of God. He wanted the birthright. He wanted the blessing. He wanted these things. He appreciated these spiritual things. But there was another side to his nature that pretty well counteracts that. Now that's what he has to overcome. He's got to overcome that side of his nature and let the spiritual predominate. And that's what you see growing now as we go along here in our lesson tonight. Do not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed thy flock and keep it. I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence every speckled and spotted one, and every black one among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me hereafter, when thou shalt come concerning my hire, that is before thee, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and the black among the sheep, that if found with me shall be counted stolen. Right, in other words, I'll take these and you take the solid colors and all of that. Right? And that is, as these, and I'll keep your flock. That comes out a little bit later. Let me go on with this. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. That's fine. And he, now that is Laban. And Laban removed that day the he-goats that were ringed, streaked, and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his son. Now that's Laban now. He doesn't trust Jacob. He's not going to trust him an inch. You know, a crooked man doesn't trust anybody, does he? He thinks everybody's like he is. That old Laban shows up like it all the way through. He can't be trusted. He's not going to trust anybody. So he took these now and turned them over to his son to look after here, so there wouldn't be any way for Jacob to cross him. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. Right? Now here he left Jacob to feed that which was to be his, over here, that would have the solid colors, and his sons to look after these, that would be out of which Jacob would come, so that I guess he was going to cheat him again if he could. But Jacob sort of maneuvers this thing here, and so he and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock, a 3 days' journey between them. This old man is so crooked he doesn't trust him at all, and he's not going to give him a chance to do anything. And Jacob took him rods of fresh poplar, and of the almond, and of the plane tree, and peeled white streaks in them, and made the white appear which was in the rod. Now, whether or not there is any power in this, some fellows who study these matters say there's a possibility that what one saw these animals before affected in conception affected the offspring, but of that, nobody really certain. At least I couldn't find any certainty about it. Don't know if there is anything, but at any rate, It worked anyway. That's all I know. It just worked. And so that's the thing we're concerned with. And he set the rods which he had peeled over against the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink. And they conceived when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth rain-streaked, speckled, and spotted. Although they were solid colors, don't you see? Oh, whether these peeled trees there, or limbs of the trees, how what that affected, I don't know. He said later on God did it. Now, that's what I'd accept that when I come to that over in verse 9. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the rain streaked and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own droves apart and put them not into Laban's flock. Now, when these when they would grow up, these rain streaked and speckled, he put them apart over here in his own here. So there'd be no question as to what they were his, you see. Now, old Laban had agreed to that. And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger of the flock did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the flock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flock were feeble, he put them not in, so the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger were Jacob's. You don't whip the old man at his own game before he gets through here. But actually, it's the Lord that grants him all this anyhow. So how much that influenced all that, I don't know. But it looks like it worked, and so we'll just say it was all right. And the man increased exceedingly, and had large flocks, and maid servants and men servants and camels and asses. Had to have these to look after his flock. So here now, as he would sell, he would buy these others, and he was increasing rapidly there. But he was not taking a single one that didn't pertain to the agreement. All fitted in the grid. Didn't steal a single one of them. But he did maneuver that. Right, now, in that chapter then, you see two things. You see the unhappiness in the midst, among his wives, between his wives, and in his home. And you see the opposition of Laban and all of that. So old Jacob had a pretty hard time of it. I have a lot of sympathy. Years ago, before I really studied Jacob like I think I have in the last few years, several years, I didn't have a very good word for Jacob. I always just thought he was kind of a conniving shyster. I think I'm wrong in that. Got a lot of good qualities about him. And he has a lot of things to contend with. Now, I know he did wrong toward his brother Esau. I know he didn't have to do that. God would take care of that. But in his early life, he was trying to go before God. He was taking it on his own. This was Jacob's real problem. Was the fact that he was so self-sufficient. He's always felt that he was self-sufficient. But the one thing you say about him, he was honest in his work for his father-in-law. Never was a dishonest thing done there. Now, the 31st chapter, he determines to leave. Now you see, whereas you see a lack of God in chapter 30. Among his wives, there's not much faith there. And he himself is... doesn't stand up for what he should have, for what God's way in those things. But in chapter 31, God stands out strongly here. And I want you to notice that, the contrast here. And he heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob had taken away all that was our father's, and all that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory, all this wealth. Well, now that wasn't so. Now they knew that wasn't so. So they show up to be just as sorry and just as crooked as the daddy was. They're just chips off the old block, that's all, these boys were. So now they're beginning to talk about Jacob and what Jacob has done, how crooked he's been and all that. We couldn't have been. Because here was, he took Laban's own flocks. And this is what they're bearing. And what they're bearing is they're his because the old man agreed to that. So nothing wrong with that. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before time. He can see there that there's a sullen look about it. As he's opposed to Jacob now. And Jehovah said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Now I want you to underscore that. God spoke to him, said, you go back. So he has returned to his father. Now he's following God's instructions in this. He read to listen to God now, but he got some more things to learn on the way. I will be with thee. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flocks, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before time, but the God of my father hath been with me. And now notice, he's bringing them into this plan now to leave. And you know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. Not a literal 10, a full and complete number of times, just over and over. Again and again and again, he changed my wages. I think that sense, they made this agreement, this will be but nearly 6 years ago, because he labored his 6 years, he was working here for his own. So during the 6 years, while the old man has fallen back off of this agreement over and over again. This is what he is saying here. Changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. God would not allow him to do what he would like to have done, the old Laban. If he said thus, the speckle shall be thy wages, then all the flock bear speckles. And if he said thus, the ring streak shall be thy wages, then bear all the flock ring streak. Now notice verse 9. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. So if it's been done, it was God that did it, not any crookedness on my part, but God did it. And he recognizes that. And it came to pass at the time that the flock conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the he-goats which leaped upon the flock were ring-streaked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of the angel of God said unto me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the he goats which leap upon the flock, a ring streak, speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest a pillar, where thou vowest a vow. You remember that back in the 28th chapter he was leaving there. And vowed this vow unto God, offered a sacrifice, poured out throughout the offering unto me. Now rise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy nativity. How long before this he had this dream, we're not told. Might have been quite a while before. But he hadn't told his wives about it. He's telling them about it now. And let's get ready and let's get away. Now they're ready to go with him because they know how the father has treated them. Now notice further, and Rachel and Leah answered and said him. So, but I want to look at this angel of Jehovah or the angel of God for just a moment. Back in 16:9-11, we read there of the angel of Jehovah. I just want to look at that a moment. This is an expression that's interested me in the study of the Bible, and I haven't always felt that I'm fairly clear on it, though in my own mind, it's pretty well settled. I think the angel of Jehovah, the angel of God, was him who became flesh and dwelt among us whom we know as the Christ. I think it was the Word of God or that one that became flesh back there. That's my own personal view. Now look back here at 16th chapter, verse 7. And the angel of Jehovah found her, that is Hagar, I mentioned this last year, you remember, by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarah's handmaid, whence camest thou, and whither goest thou? And she said, I am fleeing from the face of my master, a mistress, Sarai. And the angel of Jehovah, and I know that's the angel of Jehovah again, said unto her, return to thy mistress, and submit thyself unto her hand. And the angel of Jehovah said unto her, I will greatly multiply thy seed, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of Jehovah said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and thou shalt call his name Ishmael, because Jehovah hath heard thy affliction. And he shall be as a wild ass, and so on. The 4 times the angel of Jehovah is named there. And Jehovah is the one that is going to, through when the blessings will come there. Now look at the 22nd chapter and a passage in it here, 22 and verses, 11 and 12, I believe it is. 22, 11 and 12, yes. And the angel of Jehovah called unto him out of heaven. Now, this is when he offered up Isaac. Called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, and said, Here am I. And said, Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. From me. I believe that this angel of Jehovah is a set of witnesses, that whom we know in the beginning is the Word of God. That one, the Word that became flesh and dwelt among us. As Paul said, of the rock of which they drank, and the rock was Christ, back in the wilderness. In 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, you remember. That's my own persuasion. You may differ from it. I wouldn't argue with you one, for there's a difference between the angel of Jehovah, the angel of God, the same angel, and the angels of God, or an angel sent as a servant upon a minister at a certain time. Well, same chapter, that is 22nd, and about verse 14 and 15, Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of Jehovah it shall be provided. And the angel of Jehovah called unto Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, By myself have I sworn, saith Jehovah, because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and multiply, and I'll multiply thee, the stars of the heaven, and so on. Thy seed shall be of the sand of the seashore. So all of these passages, along with a statement in Isaiah and some of the others there, indicate that this is one of the three persons of the Godhead. And I think that is correct. Now, you study that. You may have already decided that a long time ago. I don't know. At any rate, here's the angel of God in verse 11. And the angel of God said unto me in the dream, and I said, Here am I. And he relates what I've just read. Now down here to verse 13. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest a pillar, where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy nativity. Right, now I am the God that appeared unto thee. Now I recognize this, that this could simply be a messenger from God unto whom I was sent representing God. I knew that. That could be so. But the language indicates the deity of the one speaking. Over and over that's indicated when this angel of God or the angel of Jehovah, a special one, is mentioned. You have it in Zechariah. I recall it was mentioned there also. Now notice the answer of Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion of inheritance for us in our father's house? Now, I criticize these women a little bit now. And they're thinking more of this now from the financial end of it. Our father hadn't given us anything. We don't get in the inheritance, so we might just as well leave. Rather than thinking about, if it's God's will, let's go. Their faith falls far short of what it ought to be. You see that in these two women. And they're thinking of our father's house. We don't have anything in it. Are we not accounted by him as foreigners? For he hath told us, hath sold us, and hath also quite devoured our money, or the price paid. Now, what are they referring to? The fact that Jacob had to serve 7 years for Rachel, and then 7 years for Leah. Given Leah, then 7 years, another seven for Rachel. In other words, and instead of the father giving them a dowry out of that, or something to help them, instead of that, he devoured it himself. He spent it and kept it for himself. All Laban was concerned with was building up his own wealth. That's all. As one that would sell his daughters there. For all the riches which God had taken away from our father, that is ours and our children. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto thee, do. In other words, for all the riches which God had taken away from our father, that is ours and our children. In other words, should have been ours. Now then, if God has given it to you and to us, why, it really belongs to us. So they don't see anything bad in what Jacob has done, and there isn't. Nothing whatever. Now, I don't know about those poles he laid before them there, whether you think that that was a little underhanded or not, but I'm not going to allow you to say it was, because I don't believe it was. I think it's all right. That's just good Jew business, wasn't it, sir? Yeah, that's right. That's right. The dream indicated that, and when he had the dream, I don't know. That's just some good Jewish business, I reckon we call it. All right, but the thing that I would be disappointed in about the girls is that they're thinking that from a monetary point of view. Whatsoever God has said unto thee, do. But at any rate, if that's what God said, then let's do it. We'll do it. We're with you on that. All right? Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon the camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his substance, which he had gathered. Now, it doesn't say how long it took in getting it together, as fast as he could. He got everything together and got on his way. He wanted to get away without Laban discovering it. The cattle of his getting, now notice of his getting, or his substance. He didn't want to take anything of Laban. And they gathered in Padan Aram to go to Isaac, his father, unto the land of Canaan. Now Laban was gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole the teraphim that were her father's. Now teraphim is plural. But like Elohim for God, it simply means the completeness or the fullness of a thing. Now, whether she stole one little god or several or the size of it, I don't know. At any rate, she stole the teraphim that were her father's. Might have been several of them. The teraphim are household gods. That shows that Laban was an idolater and that Rachel had imbibed something of the spirit of a father there. What'd she want with his teraphim? I don't know. Maybe she wanted to, did she want to get him away from a father so that he would lose faith in teraphim and go back to the worship of God? Well, I kind of doubt that. But that would be the most honorable thing I could say about it. Maybe that was it. Or maybe she wanted to worship him herself or thought that they'd bring her some kind of good luck. But now, how could she say, if God told you to do this, how could she turn around and steal a household god and idol and take that with her? Shows her faith was mighty short in God, wasn't it? Very, very low. That's right. Right? That were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river. Now that would be the Euphrates River. Which Haran was on the Haran was to the west and east of the river there. The river goes up north and then circles back. So as you come down here, Haran over here, so had to cross the Euphrates, that's the Euphrates River, and set his face toward the mountain of Gilead. Now whether it was a particular mountain of Gilead is unknown. All of that land east of the Sea of Galilee, and of the eastern, east of the Jordan there, on up practically to Damascus and maybe on over what was called Gilead. It was a large, sort of an undefined area. Certain mountain there, yes. So just, it was simply toward that mountain of Gilead. Now where it was, which one, we don't know. And it was told Laban, all right? Now there are three thoughts in this chapter. The first is that of Jacob's flight. Jacob's determination to flee here, down here to this verse 21. Now I'm beginning with verse 22. Is Laban's pursuit of Jacob and his family. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. Now how far away? There were 3 days' journey between them. We already told that. Now it was the third day that he found it out, and I would surmise that Jacob was over to the, maybe to the south, don't know where he was. But now that would give 3 days distance, and another 3 days, be about 6 days, wouldn't it? About 6 days difference there, or distance between the two, if I'm correct in that I can count the 3 days distance. Then we learned it was 3 days before he learned it, and that would have given 6 days a distance between them. If he was in the right direction. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the mountain of Gilead. That is in the borders of Gilead. He came to it. Now Jacob couldn't travel very rapidly with all those flocks. If he could make 15 miles a day, they say that would have been a good distance. I don't know. 20 would have been exceedingly rapid for the whole, those flocks and herds and the family and all that. But anyway, that put quite a distance now from Haran. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream of the night and said unto him, take heed to thyself, that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Right, in other words, it doesn't mean you can't talk to him, because he did. But don't try to get him to come back up here. I've decided he's going to leave. So don't you try to say good things and bad things or whatever, threaten him with bad things, or try to make another good deal with him. I don't want you to be the one of them. I guess God knew Jacob was a little bit weak along some lines. All right? And Laban came up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountain, and Laban with his brethren encamped in the mountain of Gilead. So here they are. Here's one camp facing the other camp. And Laban had enough men with him to have defeated Jacob, I'm sure, in a pitched battle there. And if it had been his old granddad Abraham, it would have been a different story, wouldn't it? Remember old Abraham took his 318 men, went up there and whipped those fellows from over there in the east there and delivered Lot and his family. Well, now, Jacob had a little more of old Abraham in him. Well, he'd have got those soldiers there and his old whole outfit and lined them up there and dared them to come over and bother him. But he didn't have much of that. That's an interesting study to me. It has been through the years. The difference in Abraham and Isaac was a quiet fellow. He didn't have much up and at him about him. Jacob was a kind of a scheming, conniving kind of a fellow. He wanted certain things, but at any rate, he wanted to get them his way. So